Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 55 of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. Thanks for joining us. Your host today, Marty Jones. Owen Woods is our very capable producer, and our guests are Everett Brown and Lisa Clements. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for the music that you hear during the podcast, and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. As I mentioned, we're talking today with Everett Brown and Lisa Clements, who are both members of the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuges, and we're going to be talking about birding in the valley and some upcoming wildlife safaris. Thanks for joining us, you two.
Nice to be here. It's nice to see you, Marty. Yeah.
Thank you. Glad to have you here. And we're going to talk about the safaris here in just a minute. But before we do, I'll ask you to each introduce yourselves and give us a little bit of background.
I'll go first. I'm a retired biology instructor. I taught for University of Wyoming and Casper College and came to the Valley about 8 years ago. And we've been having a blast here.
Okay.
My name is Lisa Clements, and I moved to the Valley in 1992. And I've been birding since 1980. And I'm a retired forester, retired postal worker, current builder of fine aspen furniture at Rustic Living Furniture.
Great. So we're going to be talking, I'm going to ask you about these wildlife safaris, which are coming up. But before we do, I'll tell you that Diana and I, my wife and I, got a chance to go on the safari that was conducted by Suzanne Beauchene out at the Alamosa National Wildlife Refuge just 2 weekends ago. And it was outstanding.
Did you see any good birds?
We did. So here's, as I recall, this is what we saw. A northern harrier. We saw a pair of nesting bald eagles.
Right on.
Yeah. Now, one of the good things about these safaris is that you see things that are maybe not available to the general public.
Right, because you guys were on the backside.
The eagles were off the road. There's a road there, but public is not allowed to drive on it.
Right.
At any rate, we did see lots of geese and a variety of different kinds of ducks. We saw, I think, one red-tailed hawk.
Right on. That's awesome.
We saw horned larks. We heard, but did not see, a meadowlark. And in the non-avian species, we saw quite a few porcupines and two separate herds of elk, one of which was more than 100 strong, and the other one was about 20 or 30.
That sounds so, like a good day at the Alamosa Refuge.
It was an excellent day, and Suzanne talked about water issues and how water gets to the refuge. We got to see where the closed basin canal flows into the Rio Grande. Mm-hmm. So it was absolutely a spectacular day. And I'm going to encourage, without you even talking about the upcoming safaris, I'm going to encourage everyone who's listening to this podcast to go to one or more if possible.
Well, we can't guarantee the nesting bald eagles on every safari.
No, and you can't necessarily guarantee a northern harrier on every safari. But what you can guarantee, well, tell me, what can you guarantee?
We can guarantee a good day.
Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about the upcoming safaris? When are they? Who's leading them? And how can people find out more information?
So the next one is going to be on April 12th, and that's with John Rowinski. And it's going to be at Smith Reservoir, and he's going to take some people around the Smith Reservoir looking for birds. And he's an excellent birder and very well known in the valley. These safaris are free to the public. They're open to anybody. There's no registration. Basically, they're just walk-on. And you just show up wherever they indicate. And so with the next one being at Smith Reservoir, you just meet John out there. And He'll take you on a little birding adventure.
And what time does that start?
That one starts at 9 o'clock in the morning at Smith. And it's only going to be for about 2 hours. But it's light walking around, nothing heavy, no heavy, intense forced march.
It's a really good idea for everyone to bring a set of binoculars.
Yep, and some good sturdy work shoes to hike in or to walk around in. And just bring some enthusiasm and some curiosity, because John's an excellent field biologist, and you'll have fun with him.
Yeah, you know, on the safari that Diana and I went on, some of the participants had the app Merlin installed on their phones. And it was really cool because all they had to do was point the phone at the sounds that we were hearing, and Merlin would identify what bird it was. That's how we found, oh, I forgot to tell you, we also saw a song sparrow.
Oh.
And Merlin picked up that sound, or the bird song, and that's how we were able to kind of track it. And finally, we were able to see it. Those song sparrows are pretty cool because they're a little bit bigger than the normal little house sparrows.
They are a little bit bigger, and they also, here's something that's kind of interesting about song sparrows, is that they have slight variations in their song. So my trips, so we have a couple other trips. We have one on April 19th at the Monta Vista National Wildlife Refuge. That's with Suzanne Beauchesne. She's the refuge manager for Alamosa and Monta Vista. May 17th at the Alamosa Refuge again with Everett Brown. May 24th at the Monta Vista with Tim Armstrong. And then I have two on May 31st and June 7th at the Tovio Malm Trail. And I'll be pointing out song sparrows there, and they're different variations with their songs.
Oh, cool.
That's why I wanted to go through all those lists and then get to the Malm Trails with the song sparrows, and they're slightly different variations, and I think that's really neat. The next two after the 7th and the 31st, June 14th at the Baca Wildlife Refuge, that's up out of Crestone with the refuge manager Ty Benelli. And then July 5th is the last one of our 2025 refuge safaris, and that one will be at Monta Vista with Suzanne Beauchesne again.
Well, it's the day after 4th of July.
Exactly.
So yeah, I'll have to see what the bicycle weather is like.
I hear you. Hopefully it's not windy like today.
Yeah. Well, these are pretty exciting tours. As I said before, these are really good ones to go on, and the guides, let's call them guides or hosts if you want, are such knowledgeable people. Everett and Lisa, both excellent birders. John Rowinski, Suzanne, everybody that's leading one of these safaris is just going to make your experience so meaningful. So what got you guys into birding?
My family got into birding. We did outdoor things, looking for things to outdo. When my dad retired from Shell Oil, he went back to college to do natural resources instead of business. And so he took a birding class and invited all of us family. And I say invited with quotes because it was more like we're going birding. And we would get up at 4 a.m. and drive down to the Salton Sea in Southern California and go birding out there. And it was something that we could all do. We could be expert or not. And then trying to take pictures was always the fun thing too. But I didn't start doing that until just recently. But mostly birding to keep me occupied and busy.
Everett, what about you? What got you into birding?
Well, I think I've always been interested in anything outdoors. But when it really came to fruition is actually during COVID, when we were homebound for so many months, every afternoon it came out and said, well, what are we going to do? My wife, Tammy. And we just started by just going out to the refuge. And it's a great resource. We just started going out and got more and more interested in what we were seeing. And As a biologist, I've mostly been a plant person, but it's never too late. And I think that it was kind of the refuge is not just there as a refuge for animals, it's a refuge for us. And it's a great resource for us in the valley because we can just go and drive and do a tour or maybe do a quick hike and see things. And so that's where I got really into it.
So how long have you both been involved in the Friends of the Wildlife Refuges here in the Valley?
I came to the Valley in 2017 and have been somewhat involved in it since then.
You just got talked into going onto the board 2 years ago, right? I've been involved with the Friends of the group since its beginning in around 2000. And
you're the newsletter editor, are you not?
I am. So I started just being on the board, and then when they saw me taking notes, they said, hey, how'd you like to be the secretary? So that happened about 2 years after I started being on the board. And then the newsletter editor came along just about the same time. And so I've been doing that now 18 years or so.
Yeah, and they're really fun to read, too. Oh,
thank you very much.
And good photographs, some of which are provided by Everett and by Lisa and John and John. Lots of people.
If you have pictures of birds or some animals that are on the refuges, I will accept them if they're, you know, decent quality and if they're yours, not from, you know, online.
Right. We don't... You don't want to get involved in any copyright issues or anything of that sort.
That's why I have a little copyright on John's pictures and a little copyright on Everett's pictures. Mine just say if there's pictures in there, they're mine.
Yeah. So, you know, there's lots of bird species here in the valley. Water birds, songbirds, raptors, shorebirds. Do you have a sense of how many species there might be here in the valley? Just a rough estimate.
Around 300, I think.
300.
I have 140 different species on the Malm Trail itself. So every time I go out to the Malm Trail, I bird using eBird and Merlin sometimes, and it keeps track of how many I have.
Cool. You know, I just, I'm involved, or I just started reading the book by Scott Weidensall on World on a Wing. And he talks in there quite a bit about eBird. I didn't know about eBird until reading that book.
I'd be glad to give you a tutorial if you'd like.
Well, it would take at least one, maybe half a dozen tutorials to get well-versed on that. Plus, I would have to have the app on my phone.
Right. It's a free app. What's nice about eBird is if you're going someplace, like say you're going to go to Pueblo and you're interested in what birds are out there, you can do a search for the city and you can see what people are seeing in Pueblo at the ponds or something or along the Arkansas. Same with if you're from the Front Range, you know, Denver coming down, and you want to see something, you want to know what people have been seeing. Like a couple of years ago, there was a very extremely rare bird found in the valley, the yellow rail. No one ever saw it, but we heard it. And people were able to find out about that through eBird because they were looking for those reports.
Yeah. So since you mentioned rare birds and extremely rare birds, what kind of rare birds might one see this year? I know you can't predict, but have you seen any rare birds yet this spring? It's a little early. I mean, we're just at the beginning of the migration, at least we're perhaps well into it for water birds, but not the songbirds.
For water birds, like the ducks, we occasionally get blue-winged teal. They're not nearly as common as cinnamon teal and green-winged teal.
Yeah, there's lots of cinnamons.
Lots of cinnamons. Such a beautiful duck with its red eyes and red body. Blue-winged teal are not quite as common. At Christmas, for about a week and a half, there was a very rare visitor here, a tundra swan.
Ooh.
Yeah, so there was one, there is one that hangs out in Pagosa Springs, and I've heard that there's a second one there now. But we had one that was on the Malm, and I think they saw it out at Homelink too, right?
I just remember the one on the Malm.
Okay, so there was the one, and it was also seen south of town too. A rare bird to the valley that we have had is a Mississippi kite, which is a more eastern Texas type species. And so that is sort of hit or miss. We saw one 2 years ago, and hopefully we'll see another one this year. Signs are favorable. What else? We will never see another whooping crane in the valley because they're gone.
Yeah, well,
you can see them in Texas, but they're not in our flyway anymore, not in the crane flyway of the Rocky Mountain population.
Yeah.
What was the warbler they saw? The blue warbler?
Oh, the blue and black warbler that we saw at State Street Bridge last spring. That's a good little place. If you don't want to go on one of these refuge safaris, another good place to bird is in Alamosa at the State Avenue Bridge on the west side, southwest side of the bridge. If you walk in there in the springtime, lots of birds get trapped there. It's kind of a migrant trap. So the birds that are coming through are migrants. They find water, food, shelter. We've had blue grosbeak there, not blue grosbeak, pink, the which is the pink one? Which grosbeak is the pine grosbeak has been seen there. Evening grosbeak, not cardinal.
No. There's a red-chested grosbeak.
Oh, the rose-breasted.
Rose-breasted.
Rose-breasted grosbeak has been seen there, too. That's kind of unusual. We don't want to say rare. We want to say unusual for species that are caught there in those migrant traps.
Yeah.
Nice. Out on the refuges, we could see potentially a black vulture. That would be very unusual. They get caught in storms that come through and bring birds through, little birds. There was a palm warbler in on the refuge last May.
Is that the Monta Vista Refuge?
Yes, I'm sorry, the Monta Vista Refuge. Has good habitat there for that.
I'll also say that you can see some really interesting things with the common birds. Just last weekend, we saw a red-winged blackbird with a white chest and a white back.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was very unusual. It's leucistic. It's not; they're not melanistic, but they they're lacking some of the pigmentation. It's really cool to see a flock of blackbirds, and there's this white one right in the middle of it. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't. Not albino.
Not albino, no.
It's a genetic or mutation that they have. And so even though, we talk about rare birds as being really quite the find. I mean, you can find some really interesting behaviors in birds. You can find some interesting relationships with birds, even the common ones. So
yeah, that's what's fun about birding is that you're not going to see the same thing every day. And if you see a bird today, you're not going to necessarily see it tomorrow because they're not caged. They're wild.
Right.
So one of the things that's really nice about these safaris is that you're going to go with a lot of people of different experience levels, zero to expert.
Hopefully they're, not better than the guides because then that's embarrassing.
Well, they might be.
But that's
fun. Okay.
And
because
then you can talk about it.
Sure. Yeah. Then you have more people. If there's a large crowd, having just one person to try to interact with 30 people, that's kind of tough. So if you have two or three folks who know quite a bit.
So calling all expert birders.
Yeah. So what kind of recommendations do you each have for beginning birders? What kind of equipment is necessary? What kind of resources would you recommend?
A good bird book. Or you can use eBird or Merlin, because they have that nowadays, people. binoculars and go find somebody who's doing this and go with them and get an idea.
Other birders are your best resource.
Other birders are your best resource.
Okay.
Yeah.
And because all of us together are smarter than any one of us.
Exactly. Exactly.
So,
great. So other birders are your best resource.
Okay. So how can folks become members of the Friends of the National Wildlife Refuge? Because that's how they're going to be able to meet other birders, is by getting in touch with folks who are in that friends group.
So one of the best ways is to go online to slvrefuges.org, and there's a place to sign up as a member, to be a member there. Any one of these refuge safaris, there'll be membership forms that you can get. And if you want to wait, because you're not quite sure you want to become a member of the refuges, the Friends of the Refuges, you can wait till next Crane Festival and there'll be memberships there.
Yeah, it's pretty inexpensive to become a friend of the National Wildlife Refuges here in the Valley. So I don't think you need to wait. I think you can just,
just do
jump
it.
On it right away. And like you say, the easiest way is to do it online. That way you don't have to wait for a paper copy and then turn that in. It's just a real handy way.
Yep. And another good way is just come out to these safaris and get the information. And we'll be happy to download some information to you about how to join.
There you go. So, you do not have to be a member of the Friends of the Refuges to go on the safaris.
Absolutely not.
It's open to anyone who is interested. And you will see lots of really good stuff out on any of these safaris. Mm-hmm.
And age is not an issue. We'll go with whatever group is with us.
Don't bring your dog, though. Leave your pet at home. We love dogs, but please leave your pets at home because it's just not conducive to good birding.
Yeah, and for the safaris where you're doing more driving than walking, it's an issue. You can't have a dog in the official vehicles for the refuge.
Right.
So that means that if you bring a dog, you're going to have to drive also, and that's just a pain. So do that. Bring binoculars, bring some water, bring a snack if you need one, and bring an interest in learning about the not just the birds, but other wildlife as well, and the water issues that are associated with any of these any of these locations. So great. Any final thoughts before we wrap things up?
Hope to see you all out there.
Yeah, just get out there.
Okay. So the next one that's coming up is Saturday, April the 12th. At Smith Reservoir. And just a reminder for that one, because it is a state wildlife area, you do need to have the little stamp or certificate or whatever it is to get on the wildlife area, or you have to pay on the spot. I think is there a pay station?
No,
there?
There's not. You need to have it before you get there. So if you have your fishing license or you pay extra on your vehicle registration, or like Everett has a little stamp on like a fishing license, but it's just for state wildlife areas. You need to have that. But no way to pay out there.
Okay. So be prepared. Let's just run through those dates one more time.
So the next one will be on April 12th at 9 o'clock in the morning, and it will go until about 11 o'clock.
And that's out at Smith Reservoir.
And it's at Smith Reservoir, which is just south of Blanca. And you'll be going with John Ryansky at that time. Then after that, it'd be April 19th at the Monte Vista National Wildlife Refuge office right there off of
the gun barrel.
Off the gun barrel.
Off the gun barrel.
It's Highway 15.
Yep. And that will be with Suzanne Beauchesne. And she'll be talking about restoration projects and spring migrations. Then on May 17th. It'll be at the Alamosa National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center with myself and Ruth Ann Johnson from the Native Plant Society. Will be there. We will give a backroads kind of tour of the Alamosa Refuge. And then on May 24th at 8 a.m. in the morning, Tim Armstrong will be giving a tour at the Monte Vista National Wildlife Refuge. And they're going to be doing mostly birding there. On the 31st of May, Lisa Clements will be at the Tovio Mom Trail. And then on June 7th, another one with Lisa Clements. And those are started at 8:30 at the Mom Trail. And then we'll have one on June 14th at the Baca National Wildlife Refuge with Ty Benally.
He's the refuge manager at the Baca. He's new to the valley. He's been here a couple of years. And our last one for the summer at 8:30 in the morning is July 5th at the Monte Vista National Wildlife Refuge with Suzanne Beauchesne. And that's another behind-the-scenes look. So if you can get on that one, Marty.
Excellent. So we've been talking with Everett Brown and Lisa Clements from the Friends of the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuges, talking about the upcoming wildlife safaris. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be right back with some outdoor conditions and news after a brief break.
Hey everyone, this is Hannah Eubanks with a Valley Calendar update. Here are the events you can look forward to this week. On Friday, there is an artist reception for Evelyn Sprouse Rowe at the Narrow Gauge Book Co-op. The event starts at 4 p.m. This Saturday is filled with events. Starting the day is an item and clothing swap focused on kids and tween items at the Living Water Church in Alamosa. This event starts at 9 a.m. The San Luis Founders Day 5K is at 10 a.m. in San Luis. At Cactus Hill Farm, there's a Weaving in the Raw demonstration with Joe, starting at 2 p.m. This event is free to all. The Veterans Casino Night fundraiser at Home Lake Veterans Community Living Center starts at 6 p.m. Entry is $25 per person or $40 per couple. Join the Narrow Gauge Book Co-op for a reading and discussion of Margaret Lowen's book, The Picture of Addiction. The event starts at 6 p.m. On Sunday, head to Society Hall to enjoy the Americana band Nefresh Mountain at 7:30 p.m. If you have an event coming up, submit it to the Valley Calendar. All you have to do is head to the Valley Calendar page on alamosacitizen.com, click online form, and give us the details. That'll do for now. Have a great week.
Well, welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. April looks to be a warm and dry month, except for the storm that's brewing for this weekend and the little squall that we had on April 1st. The critical San Juan Mountains to the west of the valley could receive up to a foot of snow during this first weekend of April. And then after that, we should expect the rest of the month to be more like February and March. Temperatures warmer than normal, and a dry landscape. The irrigation season officially opened April 1st. Given the light snowpack, the spring runoff has already started, and it's going to be probably fairly quick with rivers peaking perhaps in early May. And I know the river where we walk in the riparian park, Owen, is higher now than it was even just a few days ago. So it's coming up. But with irrigation season starting now, the ditches are going to start to fill. We can expect to see the river drop a little bit. And now for some news. A new study by American Rivers and senior economist Claire Sheridan of One Water Econ captures for the first time the economic value of the water that runs through the San Luis Valley. The report is called The Economic Value of Water Resources in Colorado's San Luis Valley. Among other findings, the study found the crops supported by surface and groundwater make up 39% of Colorado's total agricultural output, despite the population of the valley being less than 1% of Colorado's population. Additionally, irrigated agriculture was found to contribute more than $480 million annually in economic output. The study also gets into the value of outdoor recreation in the San Luis Valley. According to the report, water-related recreation provides $213.7 million in benefits annually in the San Luis Valley. For every $1 spent on recreation, $1.91 is generated through ripple effects within the local economy. The report notes that the valley's riverside lands, wetlands, and wet meadows are a critical part of the natural infrastructure supporting recreation and many species of wildlife. The analysis found that water-related habitat in the valley is valued at more than $49 million annually, and the annual Crane Festival, which we just had a couple of weeks ago, generates $4 million in direct revenue from visitor spending. We hope to have the authors of this study on an upcoming episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast to talk more about this. You can find the study along with more analysis on alamosacitizen.com. In other news, attorneys Lindsay S.C. Brenton and Megan S. Largent from the Federal Takings and Rails to Trails practice of the law firm Lewis Rice is hosting educational meetings around railroad track abandonments. The meetings are in South Fork on Wednesday, April 9th. They will discuss the potential for landowners to make a claim for compensation for their property affected by a proposed rail trail conversion that would turn 26.55 miles of an abandoned rail line between Monte Vista and South Fork into an extension of the Heart of the Valley hiking and biking trail. The law firm says hundreds of local landowners may be eligible for compensation from the federal government for the taking of their land. At the informational meetings, the attorneys will explain why and how a claim can be made against the federal government, timing how landowners will be represented in pursuing their takings claims, and how compensation will be determined, as well as to answer questions. The meetings are free and open to the public. Again, the date and time for this meeting is Wednesday, April 9th, 2 p.m. at the Rio Grande Club and Resort, and then at 5 p.m. at the 285 Rio Grande Club Trail. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has opened a public review and comment period for the proposed continuation of a cooperative farming program on the Monte Vista National Wildlife Refuge. Public comments on the draft will be accepted through April 15. The farming program at the Monte Vista National Wildlife Refuge allows a farmer to grow an alfalfa crop while additionally growing a smaller supply of desirable barley. The barley is used as a high-quality food source for the Rocky Mountain population of sandhill cranes. During their spring migration, approximately 25,000 sandhill cranes migrate through the San Luis Valley and utilize barley grains produced under the farming program. The draft is available for review on the Monte Vista Refuge website. Printed copies of the draft are available for review in Alamosa at the San Luis Valley National Wildlife Refuge Complex Office and Visitor Center, at the Rio Grande Water Conservation District Office, and in Monte Vista, Colorado at Monte Vista City Hall. For questions and comments about the draft, contact project leader Mike Oldham, 620-405-0140, or you can send an email to mike_oldham@fws.gov. Visit Alamosa has launched its fifth annual We Love Our National Park campaign. Luke Anders, the new operations and volunteer coordinator at the Great Sand Dunes, and Beth Sumner from Visit Alamosa joined the Valley Pod to talk about national park stewardship and the importance of the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve to the Valley's way of life.
I want to make a note of April being We Love Our Great Sand Dunes National Park Month, Great Sand Dunes Appreciation Month, and I really, again, like the stewardship theme of what you're planning there, Beth. I think that's a great theme, and at a particularly important time, I would say.
Well, I think it's our responsibility is Visit Alamosa. You know, we talk about attracting visitors, but I think it's our responsibility to amplify what the park needs. You know, I talk about community and they are community. And so, you know, you're talking about the lines and we were discussing, you know, what needed to go, what was more sand dune specific for the stewardship challenge. And Luke pointed out, hey, anytime you can send people to our website to get all of their information that they need to know is going to be so helpful so that they're prepared coming in. And even if it's just little things like that, you know, you talk about the line at the park, if there's like a better time of the day or, you know, something like that. And that's something that the volunteers in the Welcome Center, they're really good about, right. You know, trying to whatever the park's messaging is what we want to amplify that voice. And so going back to what Luke said earlier about just that communication and being on the same page as what our favorite national park wants is what we want. And this year, yeah, stewardship, I'm excited about it. I think it's a good message. And I think, you know, we always kind of joke, we do love our park all year. We just really go hard in April. And so The stewardship challenge is something that I hope to see, you know, extend beyond April.
And now for a look at the calendar of upcoming events. April 7th through 10th, the city of Alamosa is hosting a Water Week. On April 7th, at the Rio Grande Basin Roundtable, which meets at the Rio Grande Water Conservation District building, 8805 Independence Way, 2 p.m., there is a speaker to talk. On April 8th, at both 1:30 p.m. and 6 p.m., there are tours of Alamosa's water treatment plant. This is located at 704 Bell. On April 9th, there's a water trivia at the Sparrowkeg Brew Works at 6 p.m. And on April 10th, there's a Colorado Rio Grande Compact Tour at 9:30 a.m. at the Alamosa National Wildlife Refuge. Then at 10 a.m., there's another tour of the Water Treatment Center at 704 Bell. And then at 5:30 p.m. at the Alamosa Library will be a presentation by a master gardener. An RSVP for any of these events should go to bramza, that's B-R-A-M-Z-A, at ci.alamosa.co.us. Coming up in Monte Vista on April 17th is the Mountain Film Festival on tour. So again, April 17th at the Alcalt Sky High Event Center in Monte Vista. Doors open at 6 p.m. The outdoor documentaries start at 6:30 p.m. Tickets can be purchased online at mountainfilm.org. Search for Monte Vista, or you can purchase the tickets at the door. The cost is $15 for general admission. Proceeds go towards San Luis Valley Great Outdoors. We also have trout fishing in America. Now, usually we think of trout fishing as being an outdoor activity, and certainly there's lots of great trout streams and rivers and lakes here in the valley. But we're talking about a musical duo, Keith Grimwood and Ezra Eidlett from Arkansas. They're the band Trout Fishing in America, and they're going to be in Alamosa at Society Hall on April 12th. A Saturday evening. Advance tickets are available at the Green Spot in Alamosa, or you can go to Society Hall's webpage and purchase them online, or you can purchase them the night of the show. And let me tell you, these guys are great. I have heard them on several occasions. It's a show not to be missed.
Now, I had the great pleasure of seeing them up at Fur during the, concert series when I was a kid. And my dad was the security guard for the train. He had been hired, and which meant I got to sit with all the musicians. So I got to do the whole train ride with those two guys, and they played their own little set in that bar car. It was really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, they are excellent. And they're not just good musicians. They are good showmen as well.
And they're great storytellers.
Yeah.
Yeah, they really
exactly.
are.
Exactly. Well, That brings us to the end of this episode of the Outdoor Citizen Podcast, which is produced and edited by Owen Woods and published by Alamosa Citizen. You can listen to the show wherever you stream your podcasts. If you have a future adventure that you'd like to share, or if there are topics you'd like to hear about in an upcoming episode, send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com. Also, if you're a federal employee who would like to share your story, please feel free to contact us. We'd love to hear from you. Alamosa Citizen is working to document the firings at a local level and track what effects it will have on the local environment. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. Until next time, this is your host Marty Jones saying thanks for tuning in and listening, and have fun going outdoors. Please be careful with the wind. All right, take care, everyone. Thanks for tuning in.